When other people are in conflict and you're trying to mediate, it can be tough. There's plenty that can go wrong. How can you turn it around and steer this ship out of troubled waters? This is the second part of skill number 11, an introduction to mediation. We've called it Navigating the Tough Stuff. It's from the book Everyone Can Win, about handling conflict constructively. And now we're looking deeper into this introduction to mediation and seeing how to troubleshoot the problems that often arise and how to redirect the mediation back on track. Here's a modern fable. A desert sheik died, and he bequeathed his 19 camels to his 3 sons. He left his first son half his camels. That's 9 half camels. He left his second son a quarter of his camels. Well, that's 4 3/4 camels. And his third son a fifth of his camels. That's 3 4/5 camels. But no one wanted to carve those camels up. So the 3 sons invited in a mediator who arrived on his camel. The mediator assessed the situation and lent his camel to the estate. Now there were 20 camels. So the first son would receive his half, which was 10 camels, the second son his quarter, which was 5 camels, and the third son got his fifth, which was 4 camels. Now that added up to the 19 camels that were left in the estate. And it left the mediator with the camel he came in with. So he mounted it and rode away. Had you been the mediator, would you have felt that justice had been done? Or would you have asked awkward questions like, what about the sheik's daughters? At all stages of a mediation, the beginning, the middle, and at the end, we savvy mediators need to have our dancing shoes on, listening intently to the content and the tone of the interactions, and ever ready to change the choreography, quickly reshaping the conversation whenever it starts to get off track. We're always mentally checking if the current conversation is heading the participants towards constructive problem solving, and we're ready to intervene if it isn't. We have a clear eye on the stages of the process and the goals of each stage. We live by the sage advice, unless you change direction, you're going to end up where you're headed. The intent of this section is to add to your repertoire of mediation dance steps. Let's look at some problems the mediator should be alert to before beginning a mediation. Consider, are the right people in the room? Is there someone else with a strong interest in the outcome? Maybe meet with them prior to the session. Do they need to attend or express their support and encouragement? Consider each person's power in the mediation. Are they reasonably matched? Hierarchical power needs to be reasonably balanced or at least addressed. How significant is any power imbalance? Maybe one party could and perhaps should have a support person in the room. Sometimes they'll need a translator. You'll need to get everyone's agreement for this extra person to attend and be clear that they're not there to participate and no rescuers allowed. If having a support person in the room won't redress a major power imbalance, the situation probably needs a trained mediator or a different process altogether. And where are you in this hierarchy? Are you neutral or outside it? If you do wield considerable power within this group, you might need to put your authority to one side while you mediate. On the other hand, you may not have enough authority. Will you be able to gain sufficient respect from each of the parties so that you can steer the mediation effectively? A preparatory meeting is the time for them to blow off steam privately. Blame all they want. And you will prepare them kindly to expect your intervention if they do that in the room. You can also help them be clear about the advantages to them of fixing the problem. Having them clear and motivated will pay off later. Let's turn now to issues that might require your mediating intervention quite early in the session itself. Perhaps the problem is mudslinging or accusations or bringing up the past. Here's your manoeuvre, or your tip, I'll call them. Take strong control at the beginning. You can ease up later. Emphasise that a mediation session looks to the future and how to make things work better there. The past is the past. You might need to remind participants of this and stop them short if they're revisiting old resentments. Tell them that while some talk about the past will be necessary, it's just to clear up misunderstandings or to work out what needs changing in the future. Here's another problem. You've asked them to say what the problem is, but the people can't see beyond these difficulties. Here's your tip. Ask each person to create their vision of the future with the outcomes they want. Ask, how would you like it to be? Or, what would it look like if it was all working well? Or they might move forward with action-oriented questions, such as, where do we go from here? Or perhaps, what can you do towards getting the outcome you want? Another problem. Say someone's harping on about things that they don't want, and your tip is to ask them what they do want. Or the problem is one person is using their more powerful situation for an unfair advantage, and the other person feels disempowered and too intimidated to participate effectively. You cannot become a rescuer here. What you can do as a mediator is to ensure that everyone sticks to the ground rules. Equalise time and traffic cop the communication. Be firm and fair. And if this doesn't work, call a halt, ideally early in the piece before any unfair action plans have been set in place. This particular mediation project is probably not for you. Here are some problems that can arise in the middle of a mediation. The conversation isn't really moving forward towards resolution. There's a whole lot of conflict antidotes you can use, and I'll run through some of them here. When they say, I'm right, they're wrong, you can take the sting out of the confrontation by responding, ah, so your point of view differs from theirs. Or they say, I won't, and you say, what would make you willing? They say it's a failure, and you say, how could it work? What would save it or make it better? They say, I should, I ought, or I must, or I have to. When you sense an appropriate reluctance, you might try, do you really want to? Generalizations from a participant are nearly always dangerous. You'll hear it as they never or they always. Query it. Always? Are there any circumstances when they don't? Or get down to particular instances. You might ask, can you give me an example of when that really mattered to you? They've closed off. Possibly they've got their hands folded over their chest and they've dug their heels in and they're saying, I don't want. And you say, what do you want to happen? They say, I can't. And you say, you can't or you just can't see a way to. What happens if you do? They say, she would never. And you say, how can we find some ways? They say, it's impossible. And you say, if it were possible, what would it take? What you're trying to do is to keep turning the conversation towards the positive, towards possibilities, and away from the negative and away from judgments and closed doors. If you've decided on meeting separately before the mediation or after an initial session, you could help them ventilate their tension and, while alone together, use these antidotes to coach them on how to reframe some of their remarks. For example, you might say to them, well, if you say it that way, how are they likely to respond? They're learning to anticipate the impact of their words. Other problems can arise in the middle of a mediation as well. Perhaps someone's assuming that they know the other person's motivations. They're saying things like, oh, he doesn't care a stuff about me, or what they're doing is completely unfair. Monitor sweeping assumptions. They may or they may not be facts. And if you can, help them get more particular and detailed so that there's some real subject matter for a discussion on this. You might ask, for instance, tell me what you mean by not caring or unfair. Another problem? No one's talking. Your tip? Do allow some silences, even quite lengthy ones. They give people time to think and integrate ideas. But if they cannot speak in front of each other, you might need to offer to meet them separately. Another issue. Your participants seem to stir each other up every few sentences. You may have to intervene frequently in such circumstances, taking firm charge of the process like a traffic cop with hand signals. Sometimes participants use words that inflame the conflict. If you have set clear ground rules about attacking the problem and not the person, you may need to remind the participants what they agreed on. Point out the impact of their remarks on the process. For example, this is increasing the tension, but do it kindly to help them save face. And to encourage a more positive atmosphere, you might ask questions that help them rephrase some of their statements so they can find the true kernel within. So they keep focusing on who was to blame. I've found that never helps resolving conflicts very much at all. You can convert it from who to how or what. How didn't it work? What system failed? How did it escalate? You depersonalize and put the real issue on the agenda. Let's consider another problem. The participants don't seem to be considering options that you can see would be very helpful. If they're not able to come up with this thought within a reasonable time, you might offer them a suggestion, but present it as an option and not a direction, something to add to their list. For example, well, I've also heard of a situation where they tried this. Is that relevant here? Be careful that you don't usurp the participants' role as the problem solvers. What if someone storms out of a mediation? That's a moment for a very fast dance step. Quickly call a tea break and then find the person and say something like, we all have strong reactions sometimes. Can we go back and try again? Tea or coffee? You might repeat your soothing statement about strong emotions at the start of the next session so that they feel less out on a limb. And make sure that they know that anyone can call for a break whenever they need it. Calming down is better than leaving. Try to normalize experiences that others seem to regard as extraordinary or outrageous. For example, one participant might accuse the other, well, you wouldn't even speak to me. And you can explain, well, it's not uncommon to need a cooling off period where people don't speak to each other. New problem. Your protagonists have absolutely no empathy for each other. You could give this a go. Ask the protagonists to picture a scenario that puts them in the other person's shoes, or perhaps ask them to imagine a what-if situation. Pose questions about what it would be like. Invite them to reassess rigid or limited attitudes. For example, if you were criticized in front of your team, how would that be for you? You can also try having each of them in turn mirror back what they hear the other person say and checking with the speaker if that is what they said. It ensures accurate listening, and actually mouthing the words from the other side can sometimes work magic. Speaking from the opposite point of view, even for a moment, can break down rigid thinking. Sometimes the other person is actually making a concession, but the person cannot even hear that they are until they're forced to repeat the words. Here's another problem you will sometimes meet. There are significant differences in values, in personal styles, or points of view between the participants. And the more they talk, it only emphasizes the split between them. The tip here is to help them reassess how much the differences really matter. Clarify and validate the differences between them. For example, to you, Jane, dress codes are very important, but John needs to express his individuality with his clothes. Or, it's quite understandable that after dinner, Mary's first priority is to do the dishes, while yours, Peter, is to relax. Or, I've noticed you're naturally reserved, Alison, while Sarah likes to be up front. Could you both stretch your styles a bit to meet halfway? Sometimes people can do with a helping hand to value the otherness of people and respect their individual differences without trying to change them. And you can sometimes find something they have in common, like kids or sports or the place they work, and ask about it in the tea break just to break the tension and remind them that they're still connected. Another problem. Perhaps the mediation is dragging on and people are distressed and agreements aren't close. What do? Offer breaks. When emotions run high, it's good to call a cooling off period for 10 or 15 minutes so that each person can get out of the room or at least stop talking for a while. And whatever the emotional climate, if you've been meeting for longer than, say, an hour and a half, you'll all appreciate a little time out. And after the break, you might remind them that resolving is in their own best interests, and that's what they've both said they want. Oh dear, how are you going to tackle this one? It's proving to be a no-win situation. Sometimes by the time a mediator is approached, there's high animosity, and neither party wants the other person to win. In fact, each wants the other party to be punished. How are you going to steer this very leaky ship? When the outcomes please each of the parties, satisfaction has been balanced. However, when it's obvious that the parties only wish to punish each other, balanced dissatisfaction might be the only reasonable outcome. They're appeased rather than pleased. Sometimes the most the mediator can hope for is to end up with both parties equally dissatisfied with the settlement. And as long as the other side is not doing too well either, the trade-offs each is required to make may just be acceptable. Such outcomes don't provide much fulfillment for the mediator, but as a last resort, they may settle the problem and give both parties a chance to get on with their lives. You've reached the end of the mediation time slot, and that's the problem. This mediation's going to need more than one session, and there's danger of momentum being lost. What you can do is to try setting them homework tasks. One clever mediator family therapist who was working with a dysfunctional family, including a withdrawn teenage girl, asked the girl to log the day, the time, and the topic of each of her parents' arguments. And the parents had their own tasks, but they knew they were being observed by their daughter. And the task encouraged the girl to move out of her isolation and participate in the solution. By carrying out the tasks, she showed she was prepared to take part. So what can your people go off and do that would help the situation? Here's another problem that might arise towards the end. The agreements that the participants are coming up with are wishy-washy. They don't seem to really tackle the underlying issues, or they cannot be assessed objectively. There might be unproven generalities such as you'll be nicer, or you'll show more respect, or I'll keep things tidier, or we'll catch up more. The tip here is to try to make sure that the agreements are specific, doable, and measurable. They could, for example, describe behaviours to be used in the future. For example, you'll both say hello when you arrive in the morning, or you'll allow each other to finish speaking before you have your say, or there won't be anything left lying on the floor at bedtime. Compliance or non-compliance is then clear. And to get there, you can ask questions like, how will you know when the agreement's being kept? What specifically would demonstrate to you that they're being more respectful? You might ask them to set up a yardstick to measure the changes How often did the designated person put the garbage out without being reminded? How much time was needed to complete a job, or the number of group lunches in a month? Mediation is not a mysterious process, but you can see there are extra skills needed in serious conflict that are beyond the scope of an amateur. There may well be times when you are in conflict and emotions are highly charged and your own problem-solving reaches an impasse. At these times, bringing in a mediator may be your most constructive approach. Professional mediation services are now widely offered. Professional mediators provide individuals and workplaces with a faster, more equitable, and definitely cheaper alternative to traditional courtroom methods. And the great advantage is that the decision-making still rests with the participants. You'll have your say, and you have control over what you agree to. If you need to find a professional mediator or a conflict counsellor, start with an internet search for mediators in your area. On our Conflict Resolution Network website, you might also find some links to organisations that mediate disputes in business. A growing number of community care organisations and counselling centres and private legal practices have mediation available as part of their services. In Australia, funded organisations with branches in most states include the Community Justice Centres and Relationships Australia, and they commonly deal with personal, family and neighbourhood disputes. The family law courts in Australia usually require that couples use mediation before the court will formalise any arrangements. The practice of professional mediation services is now widespread in many countries and still constantly growing. And this growth is being supported by dedicated and highly skilled people who see its enormous value in creating more peaceful communities. Often, religious groups are leading the way by including mediation as one of the services they offer. So consider those, particularly if some aspect of the problem involves religion. Many professional organisations will offer a team of two or more mediators chosen for their expertise in the problem area or for their compatibility with the clients. There might be grievance officers within your own organisation or an appropriate government department. Grievance officers are often mediators. They're trained to deal with inequality, harassment, and other conflicts. Human rights commissions might provide another avenue for major workplace issues. I want to talk for a moment about mediation training for young people. A simplified form of mediation can be taught to children, like Jack in the story in the previous episode. Children even as young as 7 can be taught how to mediate, and a number of schools are regularly teaching it to their students. Teaching all children how to negotiate with each other and how to mediate fights amongst their friends can vastly improve the whole school atmosphere. There's noticeably less bickering, threatening, teasing, and violence. It's particularly helpful in schools with mixed communities of different cultural, ethnic, and social backgrounds. It empowers the students themselves to handle a great number of their inevitable clashes without having to resort to an authority figure, such as a teacher, to settle their disputes. Just a couple of warnings, however. Bullying. It's not a suitable case for student mediation. Whether physical or social, bullying involves power imbalances and victimisation, and that's outside of the league of most youngsters. Bullying requires a whole school approach, and it may well need adults in authority to intervene. And a second proviso, kids might not want to go to their same-age peers to resolve their problems. They might not trust them enough. But older students can become very skillful at resolving many problems amongst considerably younger students. Schools that have introduced mediation and conflict resolution training programs have found that the training itself brings a significant boost in morale and a corresponding drop in disciplinary problems. It needs a supportive principal, and it needs a teacher or a counsellor who's passionate about the skills to act as coordinator, and they'll need lesson plans suitable to the age group of children that they're teaching these skills to. Maybe you can get such a training program happening in a school you're associated with. It's the way of the future. We need to train our children to become good conflict-resolving citizens. There are many situations where a skilled, non-professional person, child or adult, has much to offer. Firstly, they're there, and the professional may never be invited in to deal with this issue. Don't underestimate the power of good intention, holding the space so that two people can work out their difficulties in the presence of a caring third person. Sometimes it works miracles. And once it has been set up and ground rules laid, the process can sometimes flow without you needing to intervene much at all. The skills of conflict resolution underlie mediating interventions, and one or two good questions that turn the energy around might be exactly what's needed. If you understand the steps and the principles of mediation and have a handle on some of the basic manoeuvres, you can be a helpful force for positive change in your workplace and amongst your friends and family. Just know when to leave the really heavy stuff to the professionals and stay away from disputes that could end up in court. If you do find yourself mediating or counselling somebody who's in a conflict with other people, try to constantly improve your skills. And a very good way to do it is by analysing what you've done after the event. What interventions did you make? How successful were they? How well did you listen, hold the space for them? And were you a caring witness? Could you steer them through the steps of negotiating their problems together? Did you help them handle their own and the other people's emotions? Did you ask a good question that opened up the conversation? And were there some sticky moments where you missed an intervention that could have been helpful? You can debrief alone, but it's very helpful if you've got a friend or colleague who's also skilled in the area. Just be strictly aware of confidentiality issues by cloaking the specifics. This debriefing is not actually about the other people at this time. You're looking after you. Other people's strong emotions can really affect you. Debriefing is part of your self-care, and use it to keep you focused on your learning path. Have a look at the study materials for this episode and for the previous one on the podcast page of our website. You'll find some pointers there on how to improve your skills. Here's a summary. In this second part of our introduction to mediation, we've covered some useful troubleshooting tips. Here are some of the things I mentioned. If they start focusing on who was to blame, remind them that this meeting is all about how to make things work better in the future. If they can't see past their difficulties, you might ask them to create a vision of the future with outcomes they do want, or perhaps ask them, "Where do we go from here?" If one person's more powerful and the other is very intimidated, make sure both of them get to speak and police any sneering or name-calling. And if that's not working, consider seriously whether the meeting ought to be adjourned and extra help brought in. If they don't seem to be considering all of the options, you might throw in a suggestion. Just make sure they know it's an option, not an instruction. If someone's making sweeping generalizations, ask for one or two specific examples. Use interventions that turn the conversation towards the positive, towards possibilities, and away from the negative and away from judgments and closed doors. And if no one's talking, allow the silence. But if the situation becomes intolerable, offer to meet each of them separately. If they can't stop stirring each other up, remind them to attack the problem and not the person, and try using a mapping process with them. Remember the value of a timely tea break. People don't have to be on the same page about everything. Encourage them to understand and respect each other's points of view. If despite best efforts, the solutions they come up with are pretty uninviting, perhaps the only fair result is that both sides are equally dissatisfied. If time's almost up and you're nowhere near an agreement, perhaps set another meeting date and give them each some homework to do in the meantime. Maybe they've got some sort of agreement, but to you it seems a bit bland. Can you get them to add yardsticks that are specific, doable, and measurable? And just one more warning. Know when a particular issue is out of your league and a professional with expertise in the area should be called in. Ready to take your skills a little bit deeper? Our headquarters are at crnhq.org. And you can download transcripts and explore the study notes for all the episodes there. There's a free manual for trainers there too. And for ongoing reference, you might want to purchase the book, Everyone Can Win. It's the inspiration for this series. In this episode, we've discussed mediation interventions that will help you through the difficult moments of a mediation session, so you can really help other people break through their issues to a new beginning. In our next, and it's the final, episode, we'll take you higher in your overall practice of conflict resolution skills. As you work with these skills, your point of view widens. You have more choices and better perspectives on yourself, on other people, and on situations as a whole. Often your compassion sparks and inspires you in ways it hasn't before. You're gaining a broader perspective. And the final episode is called Broadening Perspectives, and it will feed your soul for this important work. So thanks for staying with us for the final skill. Press your play button for it sometime soon. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the series wherever you like listening to podcasts. And that means you'll be able to re-listen to a session the moment the issue that it deals with is right up there in your face. And if you like what you're listening to, you could really help us spread the word if you leave us a review there. And do let your friends know about it too. Some better conflict resolution skills might be just what the planet needs right now.